Kof Ches Tammuz, 3rd of August, Rabbi Rafi Garson, The Life and Legacy of Rabbi Avadya Yosef, Part 1.
My colleague who tries to get me here much more often than I would like to be. Sadly, I can't get here during the year because of school runs. I sent him about 7 topics and he said we should go with this one. I said it's not going to take half an hour. He says, don't worry, we can bring you back. So it's probably going to be at least 3-4 sessions, if not more, because how can you speak about a man who had such an incredible life in half an hour? The truth of the matter is, many of you know, I spent a lot of time in Poland, and when I began researching this topic, I felt very much like standing in the Yeshivat of Chachmei Lublin. Well, when you stand in such a place, you feel katonti ledaverpo. Who am I to speak in such a place when you know about the criterion to get into that yeshiva, which was exceptional, the man of Ramey Shapiro and all his colleagues. And therefore, who am I to speak about such a great, great man who achieved so much in his life? And perhaps, when you think about it, at the end of his life, no one yet ever in the history, definitely on the state of Israel and beyond, has ever had close to 1 million people at their funeral, at their levaya. And that shows something. And as one of the Chavrei Knesset actually said, that had there been more time, there would have been close to 2 million people at his levaya. Because he touched everyone, from all spectrums of Jewish life, both Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim. He was very unique. Now what I'd like to do, I don't know if it's going to be, you might have to shuffle up and get a little bit intimate. I have a 4-minute video clip, okay, which I'd like to show you. It's on my tablet over here, so it's not so big, but hopefully you'll be able to see, but at the back you might struggle. So if you want to just move forward, I think this will set the tone, okay? All right. Can everyone see this? Huh?
More or less.
More or less. Should I put it on the paper here?
לזיווג.
Sorry to move you around, move musical chairs. So there was a young man who was unusual intelligence and diligence, and his learning captured the attention of a man we're going to speak about shortly, man, Hacham Ezra Atiyah, the Rosh Yeshiva Porat Yosef. And he was surprised when this young man didn't turn up for his studies a few days in a row. So he went to the rundown area of Yerushalayim in the Malchei Yisrael where he used to live. He knocked at his father's door, father's makolet door, and he says, why isn't your son coming to yeshiva? So he told him, look, I need someone to work in the shop. And Rabbi Atiyah sympathized. He said, look, there's nothing more important in the world than the study of your son's Torah. The next day he turns up and he's standing outside the shop, Rabbi Ezra Atiyah, wearing his clothing for work. He said, look, I'm going to work. You send your son to yeshiva. The message was received, and Chacham Avadi Yosef's father sent him back to the yeshiva. So just a brief bio. You know, living with such a gadol for the 5 years that I was receiving my learning for smicha in Eretz Yisrael and Harnof, the opportunity to spend a lot of time with this man. And his life spans almost 100 years, and what he achieved is really quite remarkable. He was born in 1920 in Baghdad. In Baghdad, Iraq, to Yaakov and Georgia Ovadia, at the age of 4, he moved to Yerushalayim. And as a teenager, he attended the Yeshiva Porat Yosef, which is just next to the Eshet Torah building opposite the Kotel. He was ordained as a rabbi already by the age of 21. And at the age of 24, he married his Rebbetzin Margalit, who became his partner for many, many years and support everything he did. But I think it's very important to point out that as great as Rav Avadi Yosef was, he wasn't born that way. You know, many people have that issue with the art scroll, some of the art scroll books that paint this picture, you know, that they're born this way. They're not. He had a great memory, okay, but it didn't come from he did not come from a long line of rabbis. And the more you study his life, the more you see that the odds against his success were extremely high. His brothers, I heard this from Rabbi Dweck, the senior rabbi of Spanish Portuguese, his brothers were jealous of him and tried to stop him with his opportunities for learning, which is something which he talks about himself. And throughout his life, there were major obstacles that tried to stop him becoming who he became. And really, most human beings would have crumbled under the pressure. Absolutely crumbled and dissolved. But he persisted, and he became the renowned Maran of Avadi Yosef that was loved by so many. So at a young age, he was sent to the Bnei Zion school by his father. The rabbis in the school were all from the city of Chalab. And the people's first memories of him, like Chacham ben Zion Abba Shaul, some of you may be familiar with his Shelot HaTeshuvot of Or LeZion, they say that when we had break time in school, he would stay inside. He would write summaries of the class or midrashim that he learned that morning. And later when Parat Yosef would go on field trips, okay, he would stay in the yeshiva and learn, even during Ben Azman. Sadeh HaMasyon, now that he's become the chief rabbi, he says, he gets to travel around the world, but we stay in yeshiva. Rav Avad Yosef had notebooks from a very, very young age. And he writes in that in school, they learn the entire year, except for 3 days. And that was Erev Purim, Purim, and Shushan Purim. And on those days, he would write a pirush on Mi Kamocha Ben Kamocha. So most of you here are not familiar with it, okay? These Sephardi world have a long piyut that they sing the week before on Shabbat Zachor, Purim. He was only 10 at the time. And at the age of 12, he receives the Sefer Rashit Chochmah, and he writes notes in that Sefer. And he tells a story when he was 8 years old, he was tested on the Mishnayot of Shabbat and Pesach, Pesachim and Sukkah and Betzah, and the Gemara of Bamatziah, four Prakim Balpeh, and he was given this book as a gift. And many have a photographic memory, but it doesn't just happen. You have to take the time to study the text, study the Torah, study the material. And he learned 24/7. His Hasmada was something which was unrenowned. I mean, there's a fantastic story that I've seen in several books, but I heard actually from Rav David Yosef as well, that the current Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and everybody consulted him. Not only in the political, the greatest political, you know, people in the government came to seek his counsel. And Benjamin Netanyahu once turned up in his study. And he's busy learning. You got the Prime Minister of Israel standing next to you. And he's oblivious. So Rav David Yosef says, I'll tell him that you're here. He says, no, I'll wait. He says, you'll be waiting for hours. And after a few minutes, he taps him on the shoulder. He says, Abba, Rosh Memshala Misapo. Ah, Shalom. You know, that was who he was. The art school, actually, I brought it with, had a story over here, which I'd just like to share with you, of when he was in Baghdad. There was no yeshivot for children his age, at the age of 10. Most of the schools at the time were the Aliyan schools, which were the secular schools. So he asked his father if he could go and learn in the yeshiva Midrash Bet Zilcha, led by Rav Zalman Abudi. Okay, now despite the fact that Baghdad was a generally largely assimilated community, they had a kollel of 10 men that learned all day. So this boy comes in and sits down at the table. He's listening to the shir. And after half an hour, he turns around and he says to the group, he says, you misunderstood the Tosfot. So they said, Chatzuf. He said, you chutzpah, well, who are you? 10-year-old schnips. So he said, well, what do you think we misunderstood? So the rabbis there stood where their mouths agape as this 10-year-old boy went ahead to explain the entire sugya from the very beginning all the way down through all the Rishonim, all the Chayim, and showed them how they were wrong. So after this transpired, the Rav Abudi turns to little Avad Yosef and says to him, what have you learned so far? So even at the age of 10, he remembers the Gemara in Bavansiyah on Kaf Gimel that says if someone is asked you how much you learned, you can say you learned less and not to make yourself out like a big shot. He said, I learned some Mishnayot. Who's the Mishnayot? The Mishnayot. So which Mishnayot did you learn? He says, Shabbat. So what else? He says, Erevin. What else? Psachim. And seriously, he learned Moed and Ezekiel. He knew them all. Balpeh. What Gemara did he know? So he started testing him with 8 or 9 chapters of Gemara. He learned Balpeh as well. This is who he was from a young age already. But really, if we would summarize Rav Avadia in one word, it would be he's an ish halacha. He's a man of halacha. You know, I remember being, I took up my rabbinate here 11 years ago with the Federation. I had to visit Dayan Lichtenstein for a shayla in his office. And I looked around, and his office is quite sparse. You know, they have a base of Midrash and head office, but in terms of what he had behind his desk, There weren't many Svarim on the shelf. He had a Shas, he had the Tanakh, one or two other Svarim, and he had the Yabiyam. And if you learn through his Teshuvot, he'll say the word Ayin Sham many times. And if you open up whatever Sefer he's referring to, you'll realize that he's only talking about one line in that Sefer. And then suddenly it hits you. Oh my goodness. It's one line out of an entire book. But he read every single one. And he knew every single one. You know, when I used to daven with him in the mornings, you couldn't see walls in his house. Literally, from floor to ceiling, there was just Svarim. And every single one was used, and you opened any single one, it was filled with his notes. More than just wallpaper. And he knew them. 1932, he's studying in the Yeshiva Parat Yosef at the age of 12 years old. He's already writing. In 1937, at the age of 17, he begins writing his Teshuvot, but at that time, a new man takes over the Yeshiva, a man by the name of Hacham Ezra Atiyah. It was a debate whether it was going to be him or a man called Hacham Atlub, who eventually became the chief rabbi of the Syrians in New York. Hacham Ezra Atiyah became the Rosh Yeshiva of the greatest Sephardi rabbis of our generation. From Rav Avadi Yosef, Hacham Ben Sion Abba Shaul, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, the former chief rabbi who gave me smicha, Hacham Sion Levi, for those of you not familiar with, was the chief rabbi of Panama. I have a lot of friends in Panama. He arrived in Panama about 50 years ago. It was a complete desert. There was not one family Shomer Shabbat. Today it's thriving. I think there's six kollel in there. All because of one man. All because of one other man, Hacham Ezra Atiyah. Hacham Ezra Atiyah turns to him at the age of 17. And he says, there's a Persian community here that's bereft of Torah. I want you to begin teaching them. So what do you teach them? You teach them what they're familiar with, which is the Ben Ish Chai. Hacham Yosef from Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai, the halakha, which is undisputed till that time in the Sephardi world. And this was the famous class that he gave every week in Motzei Shabbat in the town of Yazdin, in the Beit Knesset Yazdin, which is in Geula, which is a Persian community. Now, just be aware, I spoke to someone several years back, that I don't think there's anyone ever in the Torah world, when he used to give the shir, by the way, which I'll tell you about in a second, which was beamed by satellite across the world. And they estimate that anything between 200 to 250,000 at least watch the shir every week. Unheard of. Now, if I was asking anyone here, any rav, any layman here, to give a shir on the Ben Ish Chai or the Mishnah Berurah, so most people would prepare it, you'd have your notes at the side like you do, and you explain it a little bit. But before he would give a shir, he would take out every single halakha of the Ben Ish Chai to see if his psak was correct. And sometimes he disagreed with the Ben Ish Chai. Because he said the Shulchan Aruch has a different view. And that was a very dangerous move for a 17-year-old young man. And he probably only could get away with it because he was 17 years old. But why was it so mesukan? Because there were so many around him, loads of famous Iraqi rabbis, who thought the Ben Ish Chai is it. The buck stops with the Ben Ish Chai. And word got out that there's this young man who's disagreeing with the Ben Ish Chai. And rabbis began to attack him. Is there anything you are? A young man? Hacham Ezra Atiyah stuck by him. As did a lot of the Ashkenazi Rabbanim at the time. They thought he was great. That was until he began to argue on the Chazon Ish, which is a whole separate story, which we'll get to. At the age of 20 years old, the Rishon Lezion, the Sephardi chief rabbi at the time, was a man by the name of Rav Uziel. And he did not have time to write his Teshuvot. Who wrote his Teshuvot for him? Hacham Avadi Yosef, at the age of 20. He then decides he needs to settle down. So looking for a match, family fatal, okay, doesn't sound great in English, but family fatal had a young daughter by the name of Margalit. It's a great man. So he comes to the house to meet this daughter. And the story I heard during the Hespedin that followed, okay, after he passed away, the story was told that what happened and how did he meet his wife. When he turned up at the house, a young man, he was a very handsome, young-looking man. And Rav Fatal calls him to his study, and he was drinking some coffee or something, began to debate whether you need to make boron fashot and coffee because you haven't had enough, kadach yid pras. And in one thing left out an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, she's left waiting there with her makeup on for this guy to take him out. He turned up at 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock, he's still studying with the rabbi. So he says, oh my gosh, please take your daughter out. So he says, you can't take my daughter out, it's 11 o'clock, you'll come back tonight. So he goes into his daughter, he says, look, I'm very, very sorry. He's such a great communicator, we got lost track of the time. He's really sorry, he'll take you out tomorrow night. Anyway, next day he comes back, something else happens, I don't know, he was doing something and that sparked up a whole other discussion and they started getting into a whole pitiful of discussion, the sugya, till 11 o'clock. Daughter says, where is he? I've been waiting 3 hours. Oh, he'll come back to me. He said, no, forget it. He says, a guy, the two nights in a row, the chutzpah, I'm waiting 3 hours, I'm not, forget it. I'm not gonna go out with this man. Radia says, give me 5 minutes with him. Turns up, knocks on the door, he walks in, he says, okay, we're gonna go out. So what do you say? He said, she turned to her father and he said to me that my desire in life is to spread Torah l'rabim to the masses, and I will give you half of my sechar. I will give you half the reward if you join me in that journey. And I think he's probably the right one for me. When was it signed, sealed, and delivered? Rav Fatal wasn't that approving of this marriage because he wasn't sure Rav Eliezer Yosef was going to be able to work, dedicating his entire life to learning. So he said, I'm going to go and ask his hand in marriage to make sure it's, you know, confirmed. And he lived 40 minutes away from the Fatal's house. Friday night, he leaves the yeshiva and he starts to walk. It begins to rain. And he's drenched like a rat. And that's the way they tell the story. And he knocks on the door of the family's home. And the daughters open the door. And they call up and they say, Margalit, Ovadia's here. What do you mean Ovadia's here? Says, Ovadia's here. So he came down. He's standing out there completely drenched. And he asks her father, can I marry your daughter? And he said, okay, if a man's willing to walk 40 minutes in the rain for my daughter, he can have my daughter's hand in marriage. You know, we read Pirkei Avot every week now. Very often we don't understand what it means. If those who know who Rav Ovadia Yosef was, he had a beautiful jag, okay? Stunning clothes with gold on top, you know, nice turban, beautiful home with mahogany bookshelves. It wasn't like that. We say in Pirkei Avot that the way you quieterized Pat Melech Tochal Varastishan, you need bread and water, bread and salt, and you sleep on the floor. That is who his beginning was. He lived for 4 years in a one-room apartment, not one bedroom, one-room apartment. The kitchen and the bathroom were outside, and he shared them with the neighbors. There was no room to put the bed up and the table up, so he had to fold the table at night to put out the bed, and bring the table down at night to put up the bed up. He was so poor, to give you an idea of how poor he was. You know, in the Ashkenazi world, okay, you have to have a gefilte fish with a carrot on top, okay? That's how it goes, it's a minute. In Israel, when you have your Yerushalmi kugel, you have to have it with a pickle. Kachaze. You use pickles in Israel, come in like gigantic barrels. I don't know if you've ever lived in Israel. You don't have little Mrs. Ellsworth there, they come in like big things. So they would take these pickle jars, okay, and bend over the tops of the sides of these pickle jars and use them as pots. That's how poor they were. Total poverty. You know, the Margalit, right, I heard her speak, his daughter speak once, that when rabbis came to discuss with Rav Ovadia Yosef at the beginning, so she had nowhere to feed the baby, to nurse the baby. She used to nurse the baby under the table while the rabbis were there. There's nowhere else to go. He understands he has an obligation to support his wife. So an opportunity came up, and at the age of 28, he moves to Egypt. Comes to Cairo to serve as the Rosh Beit Din in Cairo. He's there for 2 years. And if you study the history of his life within these 2 years, really the formative years of his life, you understand what a crazy life he had in Egypt. There was death threats. It was fraught with difficulty. Hard-fought battles, there was revolutions in the community. Okay. Two of the major issues he had, and we're going to deal with one now, with the shochatim. Shochatim were those that shechted the animals in the town, and they were known as the hachamim, they were known as the wise people of town. But they were corrupt, through and through. And he tells in the story, part of the story, in Chelek Tet of Yabia Omer, in Choshe Mishpat, for those who want to write it down. Simon Bet. So he's asked the following question came to him, but this is how he deals with it. Here in Egypt, there was an individual who was slaughtering birds for the congregation. On the last day of Pesach, while I was studying in the Beis HaMidrash, somebody came to tell me that this man was shechting after midday, receiving money for the payment of his work. I sent two witnesses to ascertain that this was true. It's true. So I called this man to the Bet Din, and he comes to Bet Din, and he says, I told him what I saw. Nonetheless, also mekabel kesef befarhesi, and I'm receiving money in front of everyone. And not only that, one witness says, the whole change system going there. They gave him whatever the currency they used in Cairo at the time, and he gave him the change. Swore in the name of Hashem that this was false. The Shalach Nu Izmanu Led Hashani calls the second person, and he says that there was a problem. He said, he lists the issues over here. Not only there's a mystery of Muksa and Yom Tov handling money, Yishkan Hichilul Hashem, Mimkabel Kesef Befarhesia, and so on and so on. Chol Ha'amon Korim Kan Et HaShochotim HaChamim. And the irony of it is he called the shochtim here the hachamim. So he deals with the halachic aspects, and then he says at the end over here, "Bineh belel chag Shavuot." The story doesn't end, by the way. It carries on when he comes to Yerushalayim. But he says, on the night of Shavuot, "Haminhag kan lishchot avazim." Minhag in Cairo was to shecht avazim is a geese. "Me'en minhag kaparot le'erev Yom Kippur," like the minhag of Erev Yom Kippur. "Ksharafti v'ridol sakineh shochtim lezaram," went to check the knives of the shochtim. Masati omed edam bekatno, and I saw this guy that I had banned from shechting, he was shechting. Anyway, this guy obviously didn't like Rav Avadya Yosef very much. So he says as follows. V'ine keshavti lebeti, when I came back home, v'yasova dati beti, and I started approaching my home, akama goyim mimokre ofot besakot gedolot. There was a rabble of loud screaming Arabs outside, uviyomim, with terror-stricken screams, viyagishu lishbor adair, trying to break down my door with knives. And he doesn't explain how. He says, v'nes nisolti mehem, I was saved by a miracle. Ve'idu lishichno, Samuel Weish, nice Ashkenazi name living in Cairo. He says, my neighbor, Samuel Weish, told me, ki ne'a shochet aniskar, schar goy bekeser ishani, he was there. When this particular shochet hired a hitman for a larger amount of money, v'cher pipiot asher ikani yegoy, the shilimno b'metav, v'nishvali adavar zeh, to come and kill me. V'ne ata omed ledin, v'ashar nishan, imkasher ani ladono imchavera. Okay, that's a whole separate discussion. This was his life, okay, when he was in Cairo. Many other things happened there, but I'm conscious of the time, okay. So let me just carry on a little bit so we understand where we're up to. So in 1949, okay, it's a year after the State of Israel has been created, he moves back to Eretz Yisrael. He has no parnasa. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, man you're all familiar with, okay? A man who Rav Avadya Yosef doesn't testify about a lot of people, but he said about Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank that he knew the entire Torah. Sees him walking on the street one afternoon. Says, come and study in my kollel. And there he's introduced to a great group of people. Names that you will be familiar with. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Shlomo Shradron, Rav Bezalel Zloty, all the giants of the Ashkenazic world, and that is how he got to know them, by studying in this kollel with them in the afternoon. Eventually he continues his studies while serving in the Bet Din with Rav Katz in Petach Tikva, and he also published at that time his very first sefer, Chazon Obadia, on the laws of Pesach. It's actually two segments, one is the Divrei Agadah and one is Halacha. And he was 30 years old when he writes this. And he writes in the Haktamah that he wrote this Zecher Lisiat Mitzrayim, because he hated Egypt. And he made a promise to himself, right, that if he got out of Egypt, he'd write a Sefer, Zecher Lisiat Mitzrayim, okay, that he was once in. You should know that this was a man who had a very deep love of Eretz Yisrael. So much so that at one stage of his life, desperate for a job, the Natura Karta offered him a paid position on their so-called base. And he rejected it. Because he said, if I sit on that, despite being a well-paid job, because if I sit on that bet din, he said, then I reject the whole concept of Medina Israel. He said, then I'm not prepared to do that. He felt it was important to invest in the system that Klal Israel had at that time, politically, as we see that all the other religious movements did as well. Chabad Chazon Obadiah, I will leave you with this, was a very dangerous move. Because not only did he argue in print on the Ben Ish Chai in that book, but he started to get a lot of the Ashkenazim very upset as well, and very uncomfortable. Because he wrote things in that book that had not been in practice for close to 500 years since the Shulchan Aruch. But he felt that Eretz Israel was the place of Maran Shulchan Aruch, and we have to follow Shulchan Aruch. One of the things he writes in there, which by the way was only in the first edition, because it's not in mine, even though it was mine printed in 1976, Rav David Yosef showed Rav Dzweck this in the first edition. I asked him why it wasn't printed, and you'll understand why in a minute. He said the following: "Ra'iti po Yir HaKodesh, I saw here in Yerushalayim, Ech HaChamim Machmirim B'Ilchot Pesach Hefek Dad Maran. And so-called rabbis are stringent in the laws of Pesach against the law of the ruling of Maran Shulchan Aruch." And then he goes on to say that this is not an act that serves Hashem. One needs to be lenient when you can be with the Shulchan Aruch. And one who is stringent on others will be punished in Shamayim because he's mevazbez mamon shel klal Yisrael. He wastes the money of klal Yisrael by making them spend money on Pesach for things that are not needed. And according to some, he says they're transgressing the laws of Ben Adam Lechavero. Who says you need a hechsher on coffee or sugar on eggs or milk or cheese? And he has long tishabot about this. As the Chafetz Chaim said in his days as well, you can read them. You can understand it was quite a controversial statement at the time, so it wasn't printed in the other volumes. But he got a lot of people and said, this is the man who's 30 years old, he's back in town. He's already causing ripple waves. And we'll talk about next time, whenever the next time is, okay, he's smiling at the back, what happened subsequent to the printing of that book, how some people actually burnt the book with Biur Chametz, what that did to his mental state, and how he then began to build himself up in the ranks, not only of Eretz Israel, but across the world as well. Yeah.